Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your Owl Post for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is every single week, is the one, the only, the recently almost snowed in a cabin, Drea Kaufman.
Hello!
Hey, how are you?
I was maybe happier than Hermione and Harry in the last chapter because I had, like, a cabin with heat over my head. But yeah, I got to go in the snow, which doesn't happen very often here in Arizona. So I was pretty pumped. It was great.
It's really exciting.
Great to escape. Good for the mental health.
So. Absolutely. Did the same thing. I was at the beach this weekend, so completely different than you. But it was just nice to get away. So, I wanted to mention we got an email from a listener, Drea. Her name is Melissa. And she had written us, and she said that she loves the podcast. It's amazing. And then she kind of went into some things in the email that we're not quite ready to completely talk about yet, because she was talking about some things with Snape. And so there are some connections that, yes, just beware, Melissa. We will be talking about all of those connections once that character and who he is finally is revealed here in this last book. I'm sure that'll probably be quite an extensive conversation as we kind of work backwards and connect all of those dots for you.
I'm also chomping at the bit to share, so I'm not going to I am sharing in your want to get there, so I can appreciate where you're coming from, and yes, all of what Matt said,
all the things,
all the things, all the feels.
Yes. And they are coming. So we are, you know, getting closer and closer to the end of the book. But make sure you're subscribed wherever you get your podcast so you can get the show as soon as it drops. Hit us up with a star rating review if you're on Apple Podcasts. But you can find us on Spotify or, you know, even a place like Amazon Music now. Of course, we're also just anywhere you download podcasts, you can find us. So you can also go and follow us over on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. There's thenerdparty.com, where not only can you see our show, but you can see all the other shows that we've got going on. And you can send us an email at the contact section, just like Melissa did. So this chapter, chapter 20, Xenophilius Lovegood is the name of the chapter. And so I like the beginning of this chapter because it is something to which she uses Ron being back to answer a few different questions that we had all the way back almost at the beginning of the book. One, I kind of really like that Ron is in a much better mood now that the Horcrux is gone and they've destroyed it. And he's feeling kind of cheerful. One, I think it's because he's back with his people. But two, I think this whole chapter really feels like we're getting a sense of, and we even talk about the fact that Ron's been through something with everything he just went through. He comes out of this, I think, revived and hopeful in a way that Harry and Hermione aren't just yet, because they haven't quite been through that fire yet, the same way Ron went through. And so, I really appreciate here that I think he's come back at just the right time to kind of give them a little bit of a boost, a little bit of help. And it's definitely helping Harry to have him back. Hermione's not at that place just yet. But I think it's definitely been a good thing for Harry, at least, to have him there to be able to bounce ideas off of and even just have conversations with one other person. I mean, we've all been quarantined, forever, not getting to spend as much time with people as we would like. So this makes a lot of sense. You know, they've been doing this for a long time now. So,
yeah.
It's been difficult on them all.
I mean, you're right. I think Ron provides a new perspective given his own sort of journey, right? And like Matt and I started off this episode talking about, it's really good for your mental well-being to like mix it up and do something a little bit different. Even as a therapist once told me that it's good to stare at a wall that's not the wall you normally stare at the whole time, right? Like not even if you're doing anything different, you're just somewhere different. And I think, you know, that did that for Ron, right? I mean, he went through some really terrible things, but now he can appreciate the company. He can appreciate the safety of all their enchantments and of being together. And we've talked about it in so many episodes because it comes up in so many chapters that the three of them are so much stronger together than they are apart. And so I think this just brings that missing piece back for Harry. And, you know, Hermione's not quite ready to accept or admit that yet, but it definitely is going to add that missing element back into this group that was missing, which we'll actually go into a little bit about. I think maybe the end of this chapter and a little bit into the next chapter, Ron really will carry his weight again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think he even is starting to. One of the things that we learn from Ron is the reason why they were able to be found in the first place.
Yeah.
And why, you know, in that very first chapter when, you know, they escape the wedding, and then they're immediately basically found by Death Eaters. Turns out that they have the name Voldemort has a jinx on it. And so if anybody says it, they immediately can go to that place. It's like wizard GPS.
Yeah, they say it like kind of disrupts whatever magical enchantments you have, which makes you able to be found, right? So it sounds like that's why when they were at Grimmauld Place and they kept talking about what they were going to do next and Voldemort and all this stuff, like they kept appearing outside and were super confused, right? Because they could see through some of them, but even if they knew they were there, there was still no way for them to get to them in that particular situation. But yeah, you know, he already comes back, and I do like that he's like, oh, it's nice that you guys figured it out. And he was like, no, we've basically just been sitting here in silence, but thanks.
Yeah. We haven't been talking it very much at all.
We haven't said anything, let alone that word.
Well, and as Harry said, too, they just kind of got into the habit of doing what Ron had asked them to do. So they didn't, even when they did, they right. weren't saying the name anyway. And so, and we learned, too, from Ron that Kingsley was almost gotten by this as well. And I love there's a little moment where Harry's like, oh, do you think maybe he could have sent the doe? And they're like, no, remember, his Patronus is a lynx. And so then I think one of the things that we get here is that Harry and Ron have this really interesting conversation about Dumbledore. And Harry, you know, has been having a very hard time with his relationship with Dumbledore posthumously. And, you know,
I don't know that's a sentence I ever would have thought someone would say.
Yeah,
we're having a really difficult time with our relationship posthumously.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, that's after someone passes away.
Yeah. So,
okay. I mean, we have a couple of kids who listen with their parents.
That's true. That's
thoughtful.
True. You're absolutely right.
Sorry,
you're absolutely right.
Go
on. So what's interesting, though, is Ron, again, as I was kind of mentioning, Ron has kind of been through the fire. And I think he, because of the situation that he went through, he can kind of see maybe why Dumbledore has done the things that he did, which is basically not spill everything out for Harry right up front. And so Ron believes that Dumbledore gave him the Deluminator because he knew Ron would leave. And I love what Harry says, like, no, man, he knew that you'd want to come back. But it's true. And it was a moment where it's like Dumbledore knew there was going to be a point when Ron left, but he also knew he'd want to come back. And he gave him a way to be able to return. And so what's beautiful about that is that it shows how there is a plan that Dumbledore has for these characters and the reasons that he had given them the gifts that he did. And the point is to figure them out at the right time, which, you know, I mean, even just thinking about the snitch that Harry has, it says, I open at the close. Like, what is the right time for that? So I think, and Hermione with the book. And what's fascinating is that that immediately plays into what Hermione says, which is, hey, I think we need to go see Xenophilius Lovegood because he's the only one I can think of that knows anything about this, you know, sign of Dumbledore and Grindelwald. And he's, I think this is important. I think we need to know what this is.
No. So one of the things I kind of touch on when you're talking about, like, Dumbledore gives them these things and the comment about he knew he'd want to come back. But I also think that Dumbledore understood the value of them sort of learning these things and putting these pieces together for themselves, because he could tell them all day long when, you know, like, this is what you need to know and this is what this is, but they won't truly understand it and how to yield it if they don't learn that for themselves. And I think he knows that, and that's a lesson that sometimes is, I mean, we can sit here, how many people have been like, oh, I tried to warn blah, 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 not to do that, and they didn't listen, and then it happened exactly like I said, right? There's so much value in having, sometimes you just have to do it for yourself. He could have told them point blank what to do with it, and they wouldn't have really understood or known or done it appropriately or asked the right questions, right? In this case, I feel like the journey is so much deeper than just the answers. And yeah, well, maybe it's a little bit of a jerk thing to, like, give them these with no instructions, but it also kind of sounds like it was not his primary plan. Like, he wasn't planning on getting killed at the top of that lighthouse that night, or I'm sorry, the astronomy tower that night, right? So maybe there was this intention to explain it a little bit more because he thought he had more time, and, you know, the will was his fallback. I don't know. But anyway, I've kind of digressed at this point. But I do think that there is a lot of value, and I do think that, you know, the gifts really are showing how much Dumbledore truly understood them and how much he understood their sort of dynamic, as he knew Ron would be mm-hmm. the one to get separated, right? Like, there's just little things that you're just like, man, that was smart. So I do like the moment, and I do like that Harry corrects him and goes, no, it's not that you would leave, mm-hmm. it's that he knew you would want to come back, and he wanted to give you a way to do that when it seemed impossible. So.
Well, and I do think one of the things that's interesting, because they also have a conversation between the two of them about, you know, Dumbledore.
Oh, they had a conversation about Dumbledore and Grindelwald, again, the same one, essentially, that Harry and Hermione had, where, you know, Ron basically was Harry, Harry was Hermione, right? And it ended up kind of going in a really weird kind of dark direction as they talked.
Well, and I think what's interesting about that to me is that I think the reason Ron is thinking the way he's thinking now is because, again, I think he's come through this situation where he can see how you could do something that you regret later on, right? Like, he just went through a situation where he absolutely 100% regrets what he did, you know, and knew he was wrong to do it as well. And so that, I think that really kind of helps him be able to have a little bit more sympathy for Dumbledore in an empathetic way that Harry doesn't have right now, because he's just angry, and that Hermione doesn't even have right now, because Hermione's just approaching everything from logic. But we're kind of seeing that, you know, Ron is like the heart of this operation. You know, he's the one who does feel things very intensely and deeply. There is a reason that Ron is so important to this group, and I think this chapter is starting to show us exactly how important Ron is to the entire series, because he's able to help these two characters kind of see things from perspectives that they wouldn't normally think of, and that's good, you know. And I think it's helpful that Ron's here too, and he, you know, he's given Harry this wand, which is great that he has this wand, but this Blackthorn wand just does not work for him very well. And of course, Hermione's trying to be like, oh, you just need more practice. But, like, this is another thing where we can kind of see that Harry he knows intrinsically that that's not the case. Like, he doesn't just need more practice. Like, there's something beyond that he understands that just, this doesn't work right.
Yeah, I also think that Ron sort of, and this is probably going to come off really terribly, so bear with me, y'all. Ron almost represents sort of like the common view on things. He brings sort of like the overall understanding and perspective of the wizarding people of sort of, I don't, of a common member of society. And I don't mean that to say like dumb or apt. He brings that sort of like average thought process and perspective because he's, you know, that's his whole life, is that's what he's lived. And so I think it's also a good reminder to them is how these things are perceived and getting insight into that group. And I think, you know, he continues to sort of do that here in the chapter, saying, you know, like people, you know, he kind of describes how people are feeling about, you know, the lies and was it the lives and lies of Albus Dumbledore coming out and how people are kind of like mixed about it. And, you know, he's really able to portray what the general wizarding population is thinking and feeling, which is really important because I think sometimes, you know, Hermione has a very strong intellect and Harry is a very strategic outsider whose only experience in this community has been very unique. You know, it's an important piece to remember what's going on in a larger perspective and have that sort of like big, broad idea and perspective on their journey and the circumstances they're dealing with. Right. And he really brings that common wizarding knowledge to this chapter and next chapter too. You know, he knows where to find, Lovegood. He knows where, kind of generally speaking, where he's located. You know, he has some like general knowledge that comes in super handy. And it's just like, I don't know, there's nothing particularly outstanding about him. You're not like, oh, he's the chosen one or he's particularly smart. But like the fact that he is courageous and kind alone is enough to make him outstanding.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And it makes it really interesting too, because, you know, Ron is trying to get back into Hermione's good graces and he immediately agrees that yes, they should go see Lovegood because he might have information. And so they decide to travel there, and it's not too far from the Burrow, which is weird for all of them because they would love to go back, but they can't, of course. And, you know, Ron's like, well, at least we'll get to see Luna cause she'll be home for the Christmas holidays. And Hermione's like, wait, you were just at the Burrow. And he's like, no, I wasn't. He's like, I would never go home with Fred and George there to make fun of me. And you know, he's like, I went to Bill and Fleur's place, Shell Cottage, because I knew that, you know, Bill, we've always been on good terms, and he wasn't going to make a big deal of the fact that I had done this. And so, yeah, they travel to his house.
Well, and he forgets the key part when he's going through this, too. Like, they're probably, the ministry and everyone else are less likely to look for him at the Shell Cottage than they are at the Burrow. But, you know, MBD, guys. Whatever.
Yeah. I think this is, I love getting to Luna's house finally, and that it is basically just a large rook. Like, it looks like a, you know, a castle from a chess set.
And I love, like, that he calls Hermione out on that.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, yeah, no, that's Luna's house. Only they could live there.
He's like, it looks like a rook. And she's like, it in no way, shape, or form looks like a bird. He's like, I meant like the chess piece. And she's like, I mean, we don't trip Hermione up often. So I thought it was quite funny.
No, it was. And you know what? Sometimes, you know, Hermione, she kind of deserves it a little bit. Yeah, and so they get to the house, and, you know, everything is exactly what you'd expect at the Lovegood house, you know. And Xenophilius answers the door and is not really as excited to see them as they thought that he was going to be.
Yeah, he looks... I like how I think Harry says something to the effect of, or thinks something to the effect of, that he must have been dressed to the nines at the wedding because he's so disheveled here and very, very different than what he had expected.
Everything, I mean, the whole thing, they want to come in and he's not really excited to let them in, and he finally does, and they kind of make their way upstairs, and the place is just like I love her description of basically it felt like a smaller version of the Room of Requirement with the amount of stuff. So basically, they sound like hoarders a little bit, as well as the fact that, you know, they also have a printing press, you know, in the second level of this house, you know, making the Quibbler. So it sounds like my hell.
I was gonna say mine too. Yeah, it definitely sounds like a place I would never find comforting or peaceful at all. But I think everyone's different, right? Like, we played some games with my husband's coworkers this weekend, and their kids were in the background, like, yelling and playing and talking, and they were trying to play the game and not play the game. And I was like, oh my God, this is just, I can't do this. I'm out. Like, I'm walking away. This is so stressful for me. But they were clear, like they were used to it. This was their lives. They were comfortable. They were happy and having a good time. And I was like, this is too much for me. I can't do it. So, you know, it's everyone's. You know, it's not my cup of tea. It sounds like it's not your cup of tea, but that's not to say it's not someone's cup of tea.
Right. Well, and I love too that they're upstairs, and Hermione's like, "What is that?" And it's like this enormous spiral horn, and he thinks it's the horn of a crumple horn snore crack.
Yeah, I can't say that. I'm proud of you for saying it as you did.
And I love that Hermione's like, no, it's not. That's an Arumpent horn. Like, it's like a class. She calls it a class B tradable material, and it's extremely dangerous, apparently, to have in the house. Which, of course, he's like, no, it's not. And she's like, I read about it in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. So we're like, yay, Fantastic Beasts!
Yay, call out.
Yeah, and so, they finally. Before they get a chance to ask him, he starts making them tea, and they're kind of talking about, you know, why is he so jumpy and everything and all of this. And I like that Harry kind of understands why, which is that he's worried about what the Death Eaters would do if they found out he was here. And so, you know, Harry gets this. And so.
But the other two don't really let him up. Like, right. They kind of light him up in terms of, like, well, you're telling others to do this, and yet. You're not really heeding your own, you know, you're not heeding your own guidance. And, like, how can you be such a hypocrite? And, you know, Harry doesn't really say much. I don't think he really tells them to lighten up, but eventually they sort of get the hint.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting, too, because as he's making the tea, they're like, there's this very particular object, which is this beautiful bust of a woman that has this very strange looking headdress on it that is quite odd. And he comes into the room as he catches Harry looking at it. And Xenophilius tells them that it's modeled after the diadem of Rowena Ravenclaw, which is wit beyond measure is man's greatest treasure.
But it looks like a butterfly for your head is how I'm envisioning it.
Apparently, it's a butterfly that, like, siphon.
That, like, straps under your chin. And, like, I'm envisioning this super crazy contraption where you're, like, sucked into it.
Yeah. So, they finally sit down. He offers them tea, and they ask him a question about the symbol that he was wearing around his neck at Bill and Fleur's. And he asks them, and this is where the chapter ends, are you referring to the sign of the Deathly Hallows?
Dun, dun, dun!
And that's where we end.
Yeah, which, I mean, it's very different than the movie. The whole thing flows together very nicely in the movie and is like one giant scene, right? So I think that, you know, she splits it up, and I completely forgot, and it caught me off guard, to be perfectly honest. I was expecting this to be a really long chapter. I, like, settled in for it, and then it ended, and I was like, oh, okay, next chapter. But yeah, so for sure.
Yeah, it is interesting because, like, you get there.
Yeah.
But I think it makes sense that she splits it up because there are things you needed to do to set this up. And then the rest of the next chapter it almost feels like you want a clean slate to be able to start diving into what she's going to dive into.
Yeah. And when we end the chapter, he's almost having, we get, you know, Lovegood kind of having his first like real moment where he seems to not be quite so nervous or consumed by the like anxiety. And he sort of snaps to it, I guess. Right. And
right.
So, you know, to that extent too, it's kind of nice because we can pick up the next chapter not having him be like an awkward, uncomfortable, like weird character. He can kind of transition into what we'll see him as in the next chapter. So no, I agree. I like the break, but I just wasn't expecting it.
Yeah. Well, we will get there with chapter 21, the tale of the three brothers. But before we do, you know, Drea, where can people find you if they want to maybe speculate about what these Deathly Hallows are?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at PCFCheck or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
And of course, I'm on Instagram, Letterboxd, Twitter, and Vero personally under the name MattRushing02. And you can also find me on Twitter under the 602 Club, which is the general geek show I do in the TFM network, where we're talking about all of those fandoms that we love beyond Star Trek. So please join us over there and follow us. You can also find me over there doing Literary Treks in the Orb with Chris Jones. Literary Treks is about the books and the comics of Star Trek, and the Orb is about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And then here on the network, last but not least, doing Aggressive Negotiations, a Star Wars podcast with John Mills, as each and every week we talk about a fun Star Wars topic. But thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.